A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fishing and high adventure. KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
All right, I told you a minute ago as we head into the final half hour of the program how excited I am to be able to share my experience, our experience really collectively at Promontory. And I made this announcement to everybody that was with us on Tuesday. I've lived here my entire adult life, never been out for the driving of the Golden Spike
reenactment.
Reenactment.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's why you're here.
I am.
I am surrounded by some friends that I'll introduce to you, some of these voices you've heard many times on the program. Chris Dallin, first of all. We seem to jump from one club to the other. We got kicked out of the Quest for the Unknown gang and so joined up with the Tiki Tuesday group. They haven't known us long enough to get rid of us yet, so that's who we're hanging out with this week. Chris, this has been a fun week for everybody.
Oh, it's been absolutely fun and just really a great walk down history and learning a lot of stuff, but most of all, spending some great time with great people.
Yeah, and this is our second year of having Tiki Tours, which is fun. The last time we were down in California, Bill Rogers is here with us. Bill, of course, the mahogany voice, as Navi likes to call him, just also happens to be the voice of Disneyland and good
indeed.
Buddy, good
and
buddy
a great of explainer of earthquakes.
Yes.
Yes.
Actually was on with us live on the day we had a little shaker here in Utah. We were all pretty shaken by it. We get Bill on the air, and Bill says to all of Utah's Morning News listeners, it was just a little one. Yeah. We're all panicked, you know. How big was it? 5'7".
It was a 5'7", yeah.
Just a little one.
Just a little one.
Yeah.
Just enough to rock you back to sleep.
Last year when this group got together, we went down to the Napa Valley, which was just a kick.
And amazing.
One of the first times that the group as a whole has been able to get together and spend some time getting to know each other more so than just on our Zoom calls on Tuesdays for Tiki Tuesdays. But it's been a lot of fun this week, too.
It has just been amazing. And I think basically we couldn't have done it with all the without all the advanced planning that everybody in the group did, but especially Chris.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Chris knows a guy. Every time we pull into a parking lot, I know a guy.
Every time.
In fact, we're gonna talk to one of those guys in just a minute.
We are.
But first,
here's another guy that Chris knows, and that is Michael Campbell. Michael, I never know how to introduce you exactly because you wear so many hats, but on Tuesday that hat was a bolo.
A bowler hat. That's exactly right.
You looked really good in it, too, by the way.
Well, you know, the less hair I have, the more hats are attractive to me.
When somebody asks you, what do you do for a living, what is your answer?
I'm a hyphenate.
Yeah.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
But a lover of trains, and you have dedicated a good portion of your life to trains, worked very closely with the Disney company. Mm-hmm. Explain just a little bit of that background.
Well, I've worked as a consultant for Walt Disney's family. I was what Walt's daughter Diane called her train guy. Anytime they had anything to do with a railroad-related topic, they'd pull me in on it. I've curated exhibitions about Walt Disney and trains in a number of museums, created a number of products for the Family Foundation. I was part of the design team for the Walt Disney Family Museum.
Yeah.
And just, as you put it, a train nut since I could talk.
I think the last time we had you on the show was when, was it the big boy?
Yes.
That's right.
Came to town in Ogden at the Union Station there, and we all went up and sat around the table afterwards and had a great conversation. But it was a natural to go up to Promontory and be there for the reenactment this week. And then today, which don't, you know, give all of the story away, but today you guys actually got to go on board one of those, the Jupiter, I think.
I can neither confirm nor deny the presence of volunteers on the Jupiter and the 119.
All right. More on that story coming up in a minute, but I do want to bring in our guest who happens to be the lead ranger up there, I think, at Promontory, isn't he?
It is. Brandon Flint, it's nice to have you with us.
Yeah, I'm glad to join you guys.
Brandon, I said going into the news on the half hour that I learned a couple of things, and I may have heard these stories along the way, but honestly had forgotten them. But there are so many things that could have and should have gone wrong with the driving of the Golden Spike, but it still came off. First of all, it was not supposed to happen on May 10th. It was supposed to happen on May 8th, right?
That's correct. Yeah, the Union Pacific had a little trouble getting to the site on time, but 2 days later they got there and completed that transcontinental railroad.
All right. So, how did the Jupiter and 119 actually get there when neither of them were scheduled to be?
Yeah, you know, so those are great stories. So the 119 was coming in the Union Pacific folks were coming in and turns out, you know, there was a little bit of a scoundrels, I guess, running that railroad. They didn't pay their bills and so they got held up on their way, and then that caused them to be a little bit late. But then when they got into the Weber Canyon, they had a storm or rays in the river. It caused a washout. So they couldn't get the original locomotive over that bridge. And so they had to call down to Ogden. They sent the next best locomotive up there. That was the 119 to pick up the cars that they were able to push over that slightly washed out bridge. But then brought the 119 up to Promontory, and that's how the UP got there. On the Central Pacific side, they were on the originally supposed to show up in the Antelope, and that locomotive was on its way, but unfortunately it was an unscheduled run, and their work crews didn't know that, so they dropped a great big old log right in front of it. The Antelope ran into that, and the next available locomotive they had was the Jupiter, and so that one picked up those dignitaries and brought them out to Promontory. So yeah, neither one of those locomotives were scheduled to be there, but in the end, they made it.
That is fantastic. Mike, you must know something about the Antelope, no?
Absolutely.
Why was that the one they wanted there?
Well, it was the flagship of the fleet. It was the most beautiful, decorated, polished engine among the fleet of locomotives that they maintained.
And so that was going to be, its crowning moment.
Exactly, right up until it wasn't.
for the driving of the Golden Spike. One of the other things that was really great, and I don't know whether this has always been a part of the reenactment of the driving of the Golden Spike, is the honor that's paid to particularly the Chinese that worked so hard, and many died along the way, to make sure that this transcontinental railroad was built. The other bill was the Irish Connection.
And without doubt.
They actually had a performer out there with his guitar that sang, I think, the Irish national anthem.
And did a beautiful job of it, as I understand. And not knowing Gaelic, I just kind of hummed along with the melody. But indeed, not only that, we have to pay tribute to the great father of Utah, Brigham Young, who brought in just scads of workers to help finish on both the California, the Central Pacific, and on the Union Pacific side.
Those that haven't been out to Promontory, Chris, it is uphill, and that last little stretch of track was tough because they had to do it with no more than, I think, a 2% grade or something to allow the trains to get there.
That's right. It was absolutely amazing. If you can think about a pick and a shovel and a wheelbarrow, these guys did it. And here's what's interesting. And Brandon, I was hopeful that you might confirm this. One of the things that I learned is Promontory is 690 miles from San Francisco, 1,086 miles from Omaha, and you add those up to the most American of numbers, 1776. Is that right?
That's absolutely true. Yeah, that's right.
Was it planned that way or just happened to be that way? Okay.
We know the giggle. Yeah.
There is so much for people to learn out there, and I don't think they know that you guys are operating year-round. And those trains come out as often as you possibly can for people to see them.
Absolutely, yeah. The trains, those locomotives, we steam them up every day during the summertime. So from the 1st of May through about mid-October, you can come out and see those two steam locomotives. If you make it out of the wintertime, we actually give you a little behind-the-scenes look at them as we tear them back down and put them up in our maintenance facility. Basically, you know, we take them all apart, refit every valve, clean them all up, make sure they shine beautiful. And so if you come out in the wintertime, you get to take a peek at that, too.
You ever estimated the cost of what it is to maintain them, to keep them in running order and make sure they look the way they look when they get out there?
I don't like to think about it because it's a lot. But you know, when you see them out there, especially when you see them out there on May 10th and they've just come out of the shop, they are shiny. They are polished. Our locomotive engineers, they love those two machines. And honestly, you know, when our visitors get out there and we see the smiles on their face, you know, it doesn't matter how much they cost. They're worth every penny.
Here's the other part of the story, and I think it's kind of cool it worked out this way, Mike. One is coal-powered. The other is wood-fired.
That's right.
For a good reason.
So railroads were very practical. They burned what was available to them. When they were working east from California, they were working through the Sierra Nevadas. There was a tremendous abundance of lumber available. So those engines were wood-burning. Conversely, when they were building west from Omaha, they had coal available to them, so they used coal. And that's why the smokestacks of the two engines look so different, because of the particulate that would come out of when they burn these things. But railroads were very practical. They had to go where there was water, and they had to go where there was fuel, and Promontory Point was just the perfect place for that.
Yeah. I always am worried, Brandon, that when we talk about these things, we just assume everybody knows where it is. But tell people, if they haven't been out there, how they get to Promontory.
Absolutely. You know, it's not as far as everybody thinks, that much I promise you. So if you're headed up from Salt Lake, take I-15 north and go just a little bit north of Brigham City and take the Corinne exit. And then you will head out. There's signs from there out to Promontory. So, you know, it's about an hour drive from Salt Lake City, so not too bad.
Yeah. One more story that I thought was great, and I wouldn't even have noticed it, but they pointed out when they're giving the educational side of it, you guys as your rangers to whoever is there in attendance, is the fact that the flag that flies overhead on the pole only has 20 stars, and yet there were 37 stars in the Union at that time. How did that happen?
You know, it's another great story. So, you know, you would have thought that at the time when you're connecting the world's first transcontinental railroad, that would have been a well-planned out event. But you know, you already heard the story of the two locomotives that weren't supposed to be there. You know, oddly enough, nobody thought to bring a flag. So what we ended up having was a family heirloom from a Civil War soldier who was out there that day. And he lent the flag. And so in his honor, we fly that 20-star flag just like they did 153 years ago.
You thought of everything.
Amazing.
We actually grabbed costumes, and we were out there in period gear. So, Bill, you look really good in that top hat.
I want to thank you, and it's not every day I get to wear a top hat. And it's like Michael said, you know, the more the merrier when it comes to the lack of hair. And it was a lot of fun.
We actually got called into duty. We played the part, as it turns out, laying the final rail as some of the Irish workers. So I hear we were a big hit. Is that true?
That's what I understand. You know, we were asked by many to be in photos. I kind of felt like maybe a Disney character.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
We're going to be in family albums all over the place that we don't even know about, I'm sure. Brandon, thank you so much. Again, if they want more information, where do they find information online?
Best place to find it is at nps.gov/GOSP, or just search for Golden Spike National Historical Park and you will find it.
Well, we had a great time out there. Thank you so much for chatting with us today. And again, look it up online. If you haven't been out there, you've waited way too long. It is fun. It's a great educational thing. And if you're an instructor, an educator, plan a road trip, a classroom.
They accept buses of all sizes.
Just fantastic. We're not done with our conversation. These guys actually got to go out and play with big boy toys a day or two later. We'll tell you that story when we come back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to KSL Outdoors Radio. Final segment here. Our thanks again to Brandon for joining us out there. I didn't know till you told me, Mike, in the break that he'd bounced around to many national parks. I was joking with him a little bit because he'd been to some beautiful places like Yellowstone and
Hawaii National.
Hawaii.
Yeah, Volcanoes Park.
And their headquarters. But he wanted to come back to Utah because he loved trains. His family's here. This was a homecoming for him. It's a great story.
And you can tell when you get out there, he is so passionate about the trains themselves and the story behind it. Just fantastic. All right, a little bit about our experiences. So it was my first. I know you've been out there before, Chris.
Several times, yeah.
Mike, you were there for the 150th,
That's
I know.
Right.
Were you there before that? Or
No, that was my first.
Yeah, and that was a perfect time to be there. Bill, was that your first time?
It was not, because we were out there during the 150th.
Oh, well, you went out there. I didn't go out on the 150th, but you were there with Mike. All right, so that is not a leaky tire.
No, that is.
Nor is it the air coming out of Bill's hat.
No, it's not either.
That is
This is Chris Dallin. Ringing the bell on the 119th.
You know, it almost sounds like Main Street. If I was walking up Main Street and heard this voice.
All aboard! Disneyland Express now leaving for Toontown, New Orleans Square, and Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
Board!
That is so cool. But this time it was the Jupiter, which we just talked about with Brandon. And you guys got a special treat. I couldn't be there because I worked. We're here on Thursday evening, and I was working Thursday morning. But you guys actually got to go out to the engine house and not just see them up close. You got in there, and, Mike, you actually got to fire that thing up.
That's right. I'm trained as a steam locomotive engineer. And he allowed us to hostle the engines. That's preparing it for a run. So we had to lubricate the engine, stoke the fire, make sure there was water in there, do everything so that it can operate safely.
And remind me, the Jupiter is the coal-powered?
The Jupiter belonged to the Central Pacific, and it's wood-fired.
Wood.
You can tell by the big diamond stack on it.
Yeah.
The 119 was the Union Pacific's engine. It's coal-fired. So I was very happy to fire the wood-burning engine. You take a cut of a log, you toss it in there. It smells great, right? I've fired coal-fired engines before, and you take a shovel full of coal, which is about 45 pounds, and then you have to shove it into the firebox. And I knew exactly what I was getting into. So as soon as the operating engineer said, "Do you want to do this?" I looked over at Chris and I said, "You know, this is a lot of fun. Do you want to have some fun, Chris?"
Yeah. It's like in my first family home that I bought as an adult with four kids, we didn't have a swamp cooler or an air conditioner, and my neighbor had put his own in. And I asked him, I said, "Wow, we really got to get, you know, this swamp cooler put on the roof. Will you help me?" And he said, "No, but I'll pay somebody to help you." One of those deals. Bill, what a treat. You guys got to sit there next to...
We had so much fun. Chris and I both got a chance to ring a bell on one of the two engines and brought them out to an adoring crowd of at least 15 people. And mm-hmm. we were taking a look at all of this and just... This is bucket list stuff, Tim.
Yeah.
It's all there is to it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make any difference. I know that there have been lots and lots of trains that Michael has fired up. He actually taught me how to fire up his own little G-gauge steam locomotive. And I'm a train nut from way back when, and this was amazing.
Yeah. Chris, what about you?
Well, there's this word that I like to use that Malcolm Gladwell, he talks about. It's Maven. And a maven is someone that knows something so deep and so good that no matter what it is, it's magical. And spending the day with Michael Campbell, looking at a train and thinking about how steam can move something so big and hairy,
yeah,
it was magical.
Yeah,
because I don't know how Michael knows all of this stuff. But it is absolutely amazing, and he brings what may appear mundane to some, absolutely magical to others.
Have you driven?
You're entirely too kind, Chris. But instead, I think you said the word maven, but what you meant was maniacal.
That worked. Had you ever moved a train that size?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Even bigger than that.
Really?
Yeah. I've operated the K-36 engines up at the Durango and Silverton. They're 80-ton engines. These were 60-ton engines.
Wow. You didn't take it far, but you did get it out of the house. And I wish I could have been there. But we're going to post some of the videos because Chris took video of it. We'll post some of those videos on our Facebook page, which is KSL Outdoors Radio, if you want to look it up. But just a fantastic week. I posted on my Facebook when I posted pictures from our trip out there Tuesday, and I said, you know, I would wish that everybody would find a group of fellow humans that could get together and have laugh and love and share time together, because it really is what makes life worth living. And you guys have done that. Our wives are all here. It was a fantastic day. Great week. And we'll start making plans for the next Tiki Tour.
Can't wait. The one thing I'd like to say to your audience, if I may, Tim.
Yeah.
If you haven't been out to Promontory, you need to go. The United States as we know it does not exist without that Transcontinental Railroad happening. When President Abraham Lincoln signed the Pacific Railroad Acts of 1862 and 1864, he was very concerned about being able to defend the Western United States. Once gold was discovered, it was very attractive to foreign powers, and he needed a way to get troops across there. But by building this, it not only gave us a way to defend the Western United States, but it opened up an economic corridor through the United States that benefited everyone. The world as we know it would not exist without the Transcontinental Railroad, and its home is in Promontory.
I think the Rangers actually say at the very beginning of their conversation with people that are gathered there that it's impossible to overstate the importance of the transcontinental, and it wasn't just transportation. They, you know, talked about how long it used to take to get on a boat and go all the way around,
and the cost,
and how that all changed. It's just a fantastic experience. We do hope you get a chance to do that. That's going to do it for this week's show, guys. Thank you. Coming up next, it is Todd and Maria with another edition of The Greenhouse Show. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'm back Monday morning starting at 5 with Utah's Morning News. I'll be joined by Amanda Dixon then. We hope you'll be with us.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.